Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zaslavsky. Here's your chance to connect the dots and be taken from point A to point Z pretty dang quick. This is episode number 44. What's shaking, my friend? What's up? What's going down? Have there been more ups than downs lately? You know, I'm still on the same roller coaster I sat down in when my personal renaissance began almost 4 years ago in April 2010 when my wife Melinda told me that she was pregnant with our first son, Grant. And man, it's crazy to see where I've come from since my personal renaissance started and where it continues to take me with your help and with you on the shared journey. I love it. You are a big part of this personal renaissance as a listener of Smart and Simple Matters because this show means a ton to me and it gives me the chance to help others start their personal renaissance. And like our guest today, I hope you get rejuvenated the more and more you simplify. Speaking of simplify, I'm going strong on the preparations for Simple Rev 2014, October 3rd and 4th in Minneapolis, Minnesota at the University of St. Thomas. There is a whole lot of simplicity going down then. Early bird tickets for Simple Rev go on sale March 31st, and Dan Hayes, our fearless co-organizer, and I have a lot of work to do before then, but we're really excited about it. Even if you can't attend or don't want to come, check out simplerev.com on March 20th or later because Dan and I have already recorded the first podcast episode of a limited run show we're calling All Things Simple Rev. And if you can't get enough podcast action here or at Simple Life Together, well, you now have another place to go to get your simple living on. Although I'm excited about other things besides simplicity these days, like the Wisconsin Badger college basketball team's chances during March Madness, the dance, the basketball tournament, and of course, heading to San Diego in about a month for a rockin' family vacation, let's focus on the intersection of passion and simplicity right now. My guest, Mohammed Tohami from Midway Simplicity, or Tohami to his friends, joined me for an episode of the show, and this one is fantastic. We spoke about a lot of stuff, but we focused on what transforms an ordinary person into an extraordinary person. We also talked about how to stop your paycheck from controlling your life, why passion acts like a sweeper to clear away life's excess, and how to find your purpose. Get this, in less than 30 minutes. Get ready for a good one, because here we go. My guest today may not be big time where you live, but he is certainly a big deal where he lives. I have the absolute pleasure of being joined by Mohammed Tohami from MidwaySimplicity.com for this episode. I first noticed Tohami in 2012 when he did an interview with a previous guest on Smart and Simple Matters, Joshua Becker. Since then, I and thousands of others have been watching his YouTube channel for powerful interviews with simplifiers, organizers, minimalists, and other people trying to do more with less. But what you don't see from a calm Tohami on video is that he's Egypt's number one motivation expert and a dynamo of a public speaker. So today, he's bringing his passion to help others unleash their passion through the interconnected world of simplicity. You're going to understand what that means in just a little bit. And one side note, Tohami is also an Amazon best-selling author of books like The Pharaoh's Code and the aptly titled Midway Simplicity. We might also mention his wife Isra and his almost four-year-old daughter Malika, and of course, his newest addition to his family, a tiny little guy named Adam. Welcome to the show, Tohami.
Welcome. Hi, Joel. Thank you so much for the awesome introduction.
Well, you deserve it. And I'm glad to make people aware that you've been at this for a while. It's not like you're a newcomer on the scene. Like I said in the introduction, people may not have heard of you before, But that's just because they might not run in the same kind of circles that you and I run in. But you have a tremendous amount to share, a great story, and you're up to some really cool things. I'm really excited to get into a lot of them. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. I want to start this episode where I always start with my guest, which is the seeds of awesomeness. That means if you could tell us maybe one or two things about your environment growing up or some foundational experience that you had that helps us understand why you are who you are today.
Well, everything started when I discovered my passion for motivation and success back in 2003. That was my last year in college, and I started telecommunication engineering. This is my education, which is history now. I'm doing totally different thing with my passion. But when I discovered my passion, that was the turning point in my life. I had to work for several years in the corporate world, doing engineering jobs. But on the side, I was building my empire for the motivation world and being motivational speaker and so on. And in 2007, I realized the importance of talking with successful people and asking them about their secrets of success, because I had a feeling that not everything about how to succeed in life is written in books. Some things are hidden in the stories of successful people themselves. So I started interviewing the world's top success and business experts and asked them questions like, how did you start your success quest? What are the challenges that you have faced and how you overcame these challenges? What are the success lessons that you learned, and so on? And one of the common questions that I always used to ask was, what was the transformational point in your life? Exactly like you asked me now. Because I was curious to know what transforms an ordinary person into an extraordinary person. And I was ready with notes to write down or like make an analysis of what transforms people's lives. And I had an idea of a book where I will write like 7 or 10 principles that transforms people's lives. But the surprise was that every time I asked that question, I always received the same answer, the exact same answer.
Yeah.
In a way or another. The answer always came in the form of my life was transformed the moment I started to listen to my heart and live with passion. And after doing over 100 interviews and reflecting back on my own life, I discovered that passion is king. And only when you breathe it in can the transformation begin. So from that point forward, I started to specialize in the word passion, how to find your passion and how to live with passion and how to make money from your passion and so on.
So what?
And yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned passion and you met that transcendent moment, that transformational time where you started listening to your heart. When was that? And you, and as you ask your guests on your show what kind of struggles they have to overcome, what were some of the initial struggles that you faced when you started listening to your heart?
Yeah, the main struggle is the thing that triggered my pursuit for simple living, because in like April 2 years ago, I started Midway Simplicity. And the purpose was not to establish myself as an expert in simple living. I just realized the importance of simplifying your life to increase your financial independence. That paycheck is not in control anymore. I'm in control of my life and I will have less needs and focus more on what gives my heart that its desire and joy. So it was the challenge between my passion and my paycheck. And how can I leave my corporate job? I was working in multinational organizations and my salary was relatively high. And it was challenging to quit all that and pursue your passion and take the risk. So I had to pursue a path of simplicity to increase my financial independence, to overcome the power and control of the paycheck. And I started Midway Simplicity to record my journey. And I did what I've done before with hundreds of successful people. I started with interviewing simplifiers, like you said. And I started to ask them how to simplify time so that we can have more time to pursue our passions in our busy schedule, how to simplify health, because we need more energy, because usually from 9 to 5 you will make a living, but from 5 to 9 you should make a difference with your passion. Mm-hmm. So that part at night from 5 to 9, you need to have high energy to pursue your passion at that time. So we need to simplify health matters, and also we need to simplify the things that we own, which is decluttering, and we need to simplify our finances. And we need to monitor where we spend our money, and do we spend the money on things that we enjoy or not. And finally, we need to simplify our relationships and focus more on the relationships that gives us the joy and the support that we need to move forward with our passions. So I started interviewing people, asking them for practical tips to simplify different aspects of our lives. And then last year we did a show that the main focus of the show was decluttering and how to get rid of things that we own. Because as you know, what we own owns us, what you own owns you in somehow. So you need to get free from the things that eliminate the unnecessary so that the necessary may speak, like Hans Hofmann said. And this is the core philosophy of Midway Simplicity.
And when you say your show, you're talking about the YouTube channel. If we were to go to YouTube and type in Midway Simplicity, we'd find a pretty popular YouTube channel that you have. And all of these interviews that you're talking about with folks like Mike Burns and Courtney Carver, Joshua Becker, and a whole bunch of other really groovy folks that are all out there for people to check out. But I'm curious about you specifically. You mentioned those five areas: health, relationships, money, decluttering, and what was the fifth one?
Time,
of course. Yeah. How can I forget time? It's so important. So which of those five things did you focus on first as you made that progression from your old corporate life into being an entrepreneur and being employed for yourself?
To be honest, it's finances, because I had a goal to save from 6 to 12 months of my living expenses. So I multiplied my monthly expenses by 12, and I had a goal to save that money so that when I quit my corporate job, I'm totally secured and my family is totally secured, and we are living our lifestyle without any interruption for one full year. This is in the case that my passion didn't generate money at all. So if I had zero income from my passion, I can still survive for almost a year with my savings, with the same lifestyle that I have now.
That's pretty bold. And most people can't do that, or at least they feel like they can't do that. How did you pull that off?
In fact, I realized that you should save money in different ways, because usually we think of saving money through our existing income. So you see how you earn, or how much do you earn in a month, which is basically primarily your paycheck, and you say like I will directly save from that income like 10% at the beginning of the month. And that's it. This is the only saving method that we could know about. But this is not enough. If you depend on that method only, it could take you like 17 years to save a 1 year of your current expenses.
Yeah.
So I had to add several channels as well. So I relied on some investment options. And also I started like some coaching programs, one-to-one coaching with clients, and I also created information products online. I was selling them on my other websites, so these generated another source of income, and I was always saving the bonus that I get at the end of each year from my job. I didn't touch it at all, so it's the full year bonus. It was going directly into my saving account, and definitely simplicity and reducing your expenses added a lot to the equation, and it helped me save like 8 months of my current living expenses. And that was the moment I decided to quit. 8 months for me was enough, because I have secured other deals with other training providers and customers and so on to do speaking engagements right after I quit. And my plan worked very well.
That's awesome. It's interesting to hear how quickly you did it But with the approach that you just explained, I understand that. It took me about 2 years from the point where my personal renaissance started in April 2010 to March 2012, which is when I quit my corporate job. The finances were fine. I would have been okay with in my family making $0 for a period of time. And I did make $0 for a long period of time, longer than I would have liked. But the thing that needed simplifying was my relationships. My health was fine. My finances were fine. I feel like I was in charge of my time. My physical environment was decluttered. But the relationships and making sure that I had that aspect, especially with my wife, that was the trick. And that took 2 years for me to iron out before we were at the point where we could pull the trigger and say, okay, let's make this dream happen. Joel, just go for it. I'm kind of curious, though, just shifting gears a little bit. You know, you talked about the annual theme for your Midway Simplicity YouTube show last year, which was decluttering. And I know that decluttering is important to a lot of people, but for you and me, really, decluttering is not what lights us up, and it's not what we love to focus on. So the thing that you love to focus on and that you are focusing on currently is the intersection of passion and simplicity. I really want to talk about that. It's going to be a major theme. But before we get to that, let's segue from 2013's theme of decluttering because it leads directly into passion and simplicity. You recently wrote in a blog post on Midway Simplicity, and I'm just going to quote you for a quick second here. You said that decluttering, as perceived today, is stealing the essence of simplicity and is making people's lives more complicated. That I didn't understand, and I wanted you to elaborate. Why do you feel that way?
Well, first of all, I believe that simplicity is the only habit on earth that when you try to pursue it, you get addicted to it. Because any other habit that you try to develop, like exercising or something like that, your body resists the new thing that you are trying to create in your life. And there is, you know, a huge amount of resistance. You start the habit, but you cannot follow through. This does not apply on simplicity. When you start simplifying your life, you get addicted to it. And decluttering is probably the first interaction between you and the simple living world that you are dreaming of. To taste the true essence of simplicity, you need to start decluttering some of the stuff that or the excess that you don't need anymore. This will free you up and give you like a sense of freedom and inner peace. But the point is, you cannot follow through the decluttering journey. I receive emails from readers every other day complaining about how much they are overwhelmed by the decluttering process. They start it, but they cannot follow through till the end. And when they cannot follow through till the end, they get depressed, they get stressed, they feel that they are not simplifying their lives as they should, and it turns out, it fires back on them. And all the simple living advice all around the web is telling people, no, don't focus on stuff, focus on the experience. You know, live more, own less, and so on and so forth. Yet, most of the practical advice that people receive is only focus on stuff again. You have to declutter everything that you don't need. So people turn the focus back again on this stuff. So for me, this didn't work. And I thought that there is just one thing that should enter the equation to stabilize it and to create the balance in the simple living world. And that thing is passion. Passion gives the meaning and the why, the motivation. Why am I decluttering my life? Why am I simplifying my life? I should do this for a reason, because I didn't pursue simplicity just because it's nice. It's kind of, you know, it resonates with me. I pursued simplicity to enable my passion. I had a passion first, and I needed time for it. I needed money for it. I needed energy for it. And there were some other activities that I was involved in that didn't match with my passion. These activities didn't serve my passion anymore. So I have to quit that. So for me, simple living resonated because of that, because I had a passion and I need resources to pursue it. And passion enabled me, it acted like a sweeper. It clears away the path, the way to focus more on what matters most to me. So this is how passion meets simplicity and how decluttering is playing its role in this equation.
I love that sweeper analogy. I just have in my mind this giant street sweeper coming down the road, clearing the way for things that... the sweeper is great and all. I mean, you want it and it has an important role, but it's clearing the way for the more important things that are coming behind it, which is exactly really cool. But the question that I have for you, and we're getting into the theme of your 2014, at least from Midway Simplicity's perspective, you know, where passion meets simplicity. So how does passionate living make the simple living meaningful?
When you have that passion inside you, you gain the ability, you know, because sometimes when you go through the simple living path and it takes you some time, you will start to realize that you are sacrificing a lot. You are getting rid of things, sentimental items that you would love to have. You are maybe relocating to a smaller house. Maybe you are replacing your luxury car by a new one which is more economic but less effective and functional than the previous one. So if you don't have a reason for that, you will feel that simple living is all about sacrifice. You are sacrificing things that you hoped would exist in your life, and for some reason someone tells you that you should get rid of the things that you don't use for quite some time. So that means that you don't use them, you don't need them, so you should get rid of them. And so that feeling might fire back on people. And
well, here's
triggers,
what I'm curious. So what does that look like to you? You know, can you give us an example from your own life of the intersection between passion and simplicity, whether it's recent or whether it's going back to when you first saw that those two were interrelated and you can't separate them, and you definitely wouldn't want to separate them because they build upon each other?
Yeah, for as I mentioned before, when I discovered my passion and I had the goal to quit my job, I realized that I needed time and I needed money the most. And for me, simple living is the solution that I realized. I should minimize my needs to increase my financial independence. And when I pursued the path to simple living, I enjoyed it very much, not because simple living created space in my life, but because it created space for my passion. So everything that got, you know, decluttered, or every room that was free now for something to fill it, I found that passion is filling that space. And when passion fills that space, it brings joy to my life. And that joy encouraged me more to simplify more stuff, you know?
It's a feedback loop.
So this is the equation.
You get it. So, like you were saying, people get addicted to simplifying. And I understand why. I feel like I'm addicted to simplifying. It resonates so deeply with me. I think there's just some things that are hardwired into you as a human being. And I think simplicity is. And a lot of the struggles that we have are when layers of complexity are added upon us, whether it's in relationships or advertising campaigns or confusing our wants from our needs, that just goes against what we are intended to be, which is pretty simple creatures. And I know that's weird to think about. We look around us and how human beings have civilized the world in a pretty short period of time, but simplicity really is at the core of a lot of things that we do. Who else do you see blending simplicity and passion together in a really cool way? Are there role models for you that you're trying to emulate?
I think two people are doing that in an interesting way. Joshua Becker is somehow into that. And also our friend from Live Your Legend, Scott Densmore.
Mm-hmm.
I think he blends that as well, this philosophy. And also Jonathan Mead from
Paid to Exist.
Yeah. This guy is also very cool in terms of simplifying your life to increase your financial independence.
It's interesting to me, Joshua Becker, I won't say it's a gimme, but people who are listening in probably know that name. Like I said, he's been on the show before, and he's really big in minimalism and simplicity circles. Scott Dinsmore and Jonathan Mead are two names that people may not have heard before. Scott in particular has been huge, huge with me. He's the whole reason why I'm talking to you right now. I did his goal setting and action workbook back at the start of 2011, and that helped set me down this path to quit my job and to start this podcast and talk to really cool people like you. We'll talk about them a little bit more some other time, and I'll link to their websites in the show notes because it's interesting who you can see blending simplicity and passion. Even people who don't mention the word simplicity at all, I think Scott really embodies a lot of the principles that you and I love and that we like to help other people with. And I'd love to see other folks benefit from that, even though he's not really known or viewed upon as a simple living advocate. He totally is, if you just barely scratch past the surface.
Yeah, and they tackle the topic of simplicity from the angle of financial independence. You know, which I touched upon a few minutes ago, because they believe that when you simplify, you have less needs, and when you have less needs, then you have raised the bar or raised the ceiling of your financial independence. The paycheck is not in control anymore.
Absolutely. Okay, well, you and I have talked a little bit about what combining passion and simplicity looks like to us, but for folks who may not have reached that point yet, how do they know what that looks like? I mean, for me, when I get into an Excel spreadsheet and it's all minimalist, and I just get excited every time I double click on an Excel spreadsheet. I know I'm super nerdy. But what are some ways that a passion-fueled simplicity might look or feel like to other people who aren't used to experiencing that?
You mean that how to find your passion or...
Well, what are some of the, for the people who lack the self-awareness so far to identify when they've, quote, made it, you know, when they've been trying to combine finding their passion with leading a simple existence, and they don't actually know when they've successfully done it. What are a couple of tips or a couple of signs in terms of how they're engaging the world or what their priorities might be that they've actually succeeded in their attempt to blend passion and simplicity?
Well, there's two approaches to that. The first one is to start simplifying your life and slowing down. And when you have that empty space, you need to sit with yourself and listen to your heart and see what it's telling you. So you will use your reclaimed freedom to fetch in your heart and discover what it wants. And on the other side, you can search for your passion first and discover your passion. And then when you have a strong reason to exist, something that fuels your life with energy and aliveness, you start to, you know, approach simplicity and implement the simple living principles in your life in order to enable your passion and give it a room to breathe and grow. So it's either way you can do that. So you can start by simplifying your life so that you can crystallize and clarify your passion, or you can start by identifying your passion and using simplicity as one of the greatest tools to enable you to pursue your passion easily and effectively.
Okay, but one of the things that you just mentioned in terms of how we realize that we're achieving what we've sought out to be, and a lot of us want to lead intentional lives, but we don't actually know if we are. So you mentioned slowing down and the ability to even be by yourself, not actually do anything, just simply exist, be mindful and be present and content, just staring at a blank wall, which I do periodically. So slowing down, I feel like when you start to feel your life slowing down and you're comfortable with it, that's a great sign that your life is getting simpler. Is there anything else that you've experienced or that you've seen other people talk about where you know that you've kind of made it or that you're further down the path?
No, I think slowing down is the main thing, and silence, sitting with yourself, because some people think that the mind, you should lead your life by logic, by your mind, which is a big mistake. The leader should be your heart, should tell you what it wants to do. And the mind's role is to find ways on how to fulfill your heart's desires. So this is the role of the mind. It shouldn't be the leader. It should be the servant for the heart. And in order to be able to listen to your heart, well, you know, the voice of the heart is low. When, you know, in all the romantic scenes that we see in the movies, the lovers speak in a lower volume, you know, they lower their voice. And in order to listen to that voice, you need to slow down and, you know, eliminate the noise that exists in your life. Don't move too fast. Don't rush. Don't, you know, get, you know, too much into the work and the responsibilities and the stress, and forget about what your heart is trying to tell you, because you know, it has signs, and you need to listen and pay attention to these signs, and the voice and the heart is keeping on giving you these signs no matter what. So it's better earlier you can pay attention to these signs, the better. Okay.
But it takes rituals and habits in order to get into that good positive feedback loop that we were just talking about, that self-reinforcing. What about you? Do you meditate on a daily basis? Do you have some kind of gratitude ritual that helps you be present and mindful? What do you typically do on a day-to-day basis?
It's good that you mentioned gratitude. This is one of the activities that I used to do. I had a gratitude journal in a part of my life. And I used, before I go to sleep every day, I used to write one thing that I'm grateful for that day and sleep on it. You cannot imagine what was happening in my life. It was like magic. Opportunities started to flow and things started to open up in ways I could never like plan for or predict or work on. It just flowed that way. So gratitude is definitely one of the most powerful tactics, because if you cannot recognize things that you are already grateful for, or things that you already have in your life, how can you expect to attract things that you aim for? If you cannot recognize what you already have, then how can you recognize what you don't have still?
But you mentioned it almost like you said that in past tense. I thought you said you used to do that. Do you not do that anymore? Has something else better or different replaced it?
I haven't been doing that. I always aspire to do that again, but I consider blogging and putting my ideas on paper, on blog, and the interviews something that gets me connected to my passion and to wonderful people from all over the world.
Okay, well, let's talk about that for a moment. Midway Simplicity, your website, where most people find the simplicity things that you're putting out in the world, separate from the passion, and your personal website, tohami.com, which I'll link to in the show notes, because there's some pretty cool stuff there that I think folks would be interested in as well. But I know you've talked about it over and over again on Midway Simplicity, about the middle ground application of simplicity, not going to extremes, not trying radical experiments, which I have to admit, I've done some pretty nutty minimalist experiments in my day. Some of them were unintentional, like going 16 months without buying any new clothing. I didn't even try to do that. It just ended up being that way. And for a lot of people, they think, what? And I live in Minnesota. I live somewhere where there's all four seasons. So typically you're buying a lot of things for 100 degrees Fahrenheit or for negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit like it is today. Why is the middle ground application of simplicity so important to you, though?
Yeah, because I don't like extremes, and I was looking for simple approaches to change my lifestyle a bit. You know, I was not pursuing simplicity for the sake of simplicity, so that I wanted to do extreme things and get attention as a great simplifier. I just wanted to acquire some time and money and energy and space to pursue my passion on the side from 5 to 9. As I said, from 9 to 5, I was making a living, but from 5 to 9, I wanted to make a difference. So once I had what I wanted from this practical mainstream tips, that was very satisfying to me. I didn't want to pursue an extreme path for the sake of simplicity. Passion was my primary focus.
So what are a couple of the things that are that you encourage people to do on Midway Simplicity that are mainstream enough to be gentle and to not spook the heck out of even the most strident objectionist who say, I could never simplify. I don't even know why I would want to simplify in the first place. Do you have a couple of go-to techniques or tips that you give people when they're just starting out?
Yeah, one related to time and one related to the things we own. The one related to time is the time tracking. It's very difficult, I know, and it's not easy, but the result is miraculous. Time tracking is all about getting a sheet of paper and jotting down for a period of a week everything that you do on the day. So, for example, I wake up on that time and I go to the bathroom on that time. I finish brushing my teeth on that time. I took my breakfast on that time and I finished my breakfast on that time. I went to work on that time. I did the first task at work on that time and I finished it on that time. I went to a client meeting on that time and ended the meeting on that time. Everything you record, everything you do on the day, you record when it starts and then when it finishes. And after a week, you look at the cheat, the time tracker that you had, and examine the output. One of my seminar participants did that, and here is what she discovered. She looked at the time tracker, and she discovered, for example, I'm doing now task number one, and then Facebook, task number two, and then Facebook, task number three, Facebook. Yes. So Facebook is like the the transition period between any task and the other. And she thought that she was just going on the Facebook, her Facebook account, to check the status of her friends and in 5 minutes break. But she realized that she was taking like 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 20 minutes, 15, big chunks of time were being wasted on Facebook. So it was a big realization for her. And she started to minimize or eliminate some of these wasted time. And she now has like a lot of room to pursue things that she likes more.
Now, did she realize how much time she was wasting because she wasn't creating the output that she expected? Because I think that's the key thing, is tracking your time is all well and good and knowing what you're doing. But I think the most important part of tracking your time is seeing the results of how you're spending your time and what the output is of your time, whether your relationships are getting stronger, whether you're making more money, whether your life is getting simpler. So it was really in the assessment of the output that she realized, I need to do something else. I need to simplify, right?
Yeah, it starts with passion again, because she now has a passion, and when she looks at her schedule, she cannot find time to pursue that passion. I'm already busy enough. There is no room. I have tons of activities that I'm engaged in, and I have no room to pursue my passion. This is when time tracking fits in. Because you will see a lot of gaps and things that you get, minutes and hours that you can reclaim and free and redirect to your passion. So it comes from that perspective.
Okay, so what's the other thing that you mentioned? So that's one is time tracking. What about the other one?
Yeah, the other one is somehow related to the things that we own, decluttering. Decluttering again is important, and it gives you the essence of simplicity. But you need to do it, as we said before, carefully and for purpose. And one of my favorite mainstream techniques is the one that is shared by Colleen Madsen on her website, 365 Less Things. Her approach is simply to declutter one item per day. And at the end of the year, you will have 365 items declutter, which is a fair enough approach. Just look around every day for one thing that you can get rid of, and that's it. You have done your task. So that's fair enough, and it's exciting. And the beautiful thing about that is when the momentum starts, so day one, I decluttered one item. Day two, one. Day three, one item. But day four, I may declutter 2-3 items. Day five, I may declutter 10 items, because when the momentum starts, you find yourself being more productive and you do more of the things that you used to do. So this is a fair approach. I used it and it's very beneficial.
Yeah, it's kind of similar too. Dan and Vanessa Hayes of Simple Life Together, they have something they call Edit and Forget It. 2014 and 2014, where you take 2014 items somewhere in the year 2014 and you de-own them, declutter them. I mean, sometimes there's a difference between de-owning and decluttering. Brooke McElroy, of slowyourhome.com, she has something similar too, where it's basically the same kind of thing over the course of a year. But you're talking about a daily ritual of decluttering so that you build that momentum, as opposed to realizing, oh crap, it's December 31st. I have 2014 items that I need to declutter. I better get cracking right now. I like Colleen's approach. That's pretty cool. But you keep going back to passion. And I want to give you an opportunity to talk about a really groovy resource that you created. It's called the PAS technique, P-A-S technique. And you are helping other people, hundreds of folks, I know thousands of people probably by now, just light that inner fire. Maybe it's never been lit before, and then having that done for the first time. So first of all, can you tell us what the PAS technique is?
Yeah, the PAS technique is a way to find your passion and purpose in life in less than 30 minutes without asking you any questions at all, because it all started back in 2003 when I discovered my passion. It took me 6 years of asking myself, what do I want to do with my life, until I realized the answer in 2003. So I wanted to create something that makes it easier for people, you know, to discover their passion and purpose, because I understood how it would impact their lives. So back then, I created an ebook, and I called it the Life Purpose Discovery System. And all what I have done back then is that I read all the resources, everything that I could get my hands on about how to find your purpose in life, and I systemized the process, the information, and I distilled it into a 7 step-by-step process. And in each step, you ask yourself a certain set of questions. And then when you answer all the questions, you move on to the next step. And by the 7th step, you are done. You can write a very clear and concise life purpose statement. But I had some challenges with this system. It worked with a lot of people. But the common feedback I always received was, it's very difficult. The questions are very hard to answer. Questions like, if the doctor told you that you are going to die in 6 months, how would you change your life? If you won $1 million, what are you going to do with them? Sure. What people were, you know, what did you like to do when you were a child? What are you talented at? So things that are somehow disturbing or you know, strange for you. First time to think about these stuff, so you got confused, and it adds to your already confused state searching for your passion. So the thing that I did back then is that I created like a one-to-one coaching program to help people go through the questions, and it worked really well. But I don't feel so much comfortable with one-to-one coaching, and I wanted to help much, much more people quickly to discover their passion, because one-to-one is a very slow process to create changes in people's lives. I wanted to impact thousands of lives very quickly. So I had to figure out a technique that is faster and easier than this one. But the problem or the challenge was that I couldn't find another way, because I searched everything about finding purpose in life. I didn't believe that there is a missing information that I should read or research.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts as I go through it. So just so folks are clear, PAS, it's an acronym for Passion, Advantage, and Solution. Yeah. And as I go through, you talk about this in the PDF about all of the different things that you read and all, some of the things that you mentioned, those questions like, if you had $1 million, what would you do? Or if you could pick anything that you ever wanted to do in life, you know, what would it be? That kind of stuff. I still don't understand, though, synthesizing something so complex as picking a singular work focus into such a small resource. I think you're about to get into that. How did you simplify and synthesize all of these things when there was a missing link, and you provided that link, right?
The surprising thing is that I didn't do that. I didn't synthesize, I didn't analyze, I didn't engineer that thing at all. It came up as a pure inspiration, because when I decided that it's not a matter of researching for more stuff, I decided to let go and give my subconscious mind the control and do the exact same thing that I've done to find my passion in life. because I found my passion by asking myself, what do I want to do with my life? And the subconscious mind found the answer in a way or another. So I asked my mind a question: what is a technique that is much easier than this one and that does not contain or include any type of questions at all, and you can apply it on mass audience, not one-to-one? And I left that question to my mind to get the answer somehow or some way, or, you know. And one day, just when I was about to sleep, the answer came to me. And I spent like a few days sleepless almost to come up with that, or to write down that inspiration that came to my mind. So it was like one shot, without synthesizing, without analyzing, without researching. It came like that, one shot. But the challenge back then is that I ended up with something written that I had no clue if it works or not. You know, so I had to test it. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a blog post on my blog telling people that I've discovered a new technique that will help them find their passion. I'm looking for volunteers to test it. And I received application from so many people, and I chose like different regions, different countries, from the US, from Europe, from the Middle East, from Australia, from Asia, to test different cultures. And I did the technique with them one-to-one at the beginning, and it worked 100%. And then I took it to group coaching online, and it worked 100%. And then in live trainings and seminars, I tested the technique from people from 1 to 10 to 20 to 50 to 100. It didn't matter. Everyone could find their passion in less than 30 minutes. Yeah. And that is the beauty of the technique, because it doesn't have any question. It's a matter of, you know, like when you go to a restaurant and you have some choices in the menu and you pick up your favorite one. It's as easy as that. You have some choices, you pick up what resonates with you, and that's it.
That's crazy. The exercise that you make people go through, make is a strong word. They get the privilege of going through. You've created this cool framework for them where you put together a whole bunch of passions and then you put them head to head and you start eliminating them one at a time. So what about you? If I were to put simplicity and chess next to each other, things that you are endlessly passionate about, which one's going to get crossed off first?
I would cross off simplicity.
Oh, really? Chess wins, huh?
Yeah, I love chess in a crazy way. And it was a difficult decision to identify whether should I pursue motivation or chess as a dominant passion. But I had some clues to help me do that.
Mm-hmm. So motivation is the big thing with you. And I know you said, especially in your home country, Egypt, you're rather big time when it comes to the motivation scene. But when you're not motivating, are you playing chess with people, with your family? Are you in some kind of a league or a local circuit?
Yeah. In the past, I played in the Egyptian league for chess. So I had it in a professional way. But now it's not anymore now, because I'm purely focus on motivation. But simplicity is an integrated part in the motivation passion, because passion needs two pillars, two great pillars, maybe three. The first pillar is simplicity. You cannot live with passion without simplicity, period. So simple living is at the core focus of my motivation passion. And the second thing is networking, building connections with successful people. And this is the second book that I wrote. It's called Story Networking: How to Build Connections with Successful People to Support You and Support Your Passion and so on. So networking is fundamental for me. And networking, business networking, is an area of expertise by itself, exactly like simplicity. But I'm integrating it with my field of motivation, because simplicity and networking are a must to pursue a life of passion. You cannot pursue it alone without connections. Mm-hmm. And you cannot pursue it when your life is too much cluttered with things that you don't need. And the third pillar maybe is broadcasting. When you need to tell the world about your passion through Facebook page, YouTube channel, through a blog, through a Twitter account. You need to broadcast your ideas and share your passion with the world.
Lots of really cool mediums for people to pick in terms of how they want to broadcast. And even better, I found, is intercepting people. Instead of just bombarding them with message after message, creating a platform, planting a flag for something that you stand for, and then being able to intercept people, whether it's through a Google search or something else, where they find you instead of you constantly going out and telling the world, hey world, check me out. I'm awesome over here. You totally got to see what I've got on my sleeve. That gets pretty old pretty quick, and you never do that. I try never to do that. But simplicity and connections, you mentioned networking, but I like to think of it in terms of connections, not necessarily to just people, although that's really important, but being connected to your environment, being connected to the world, to your community, and then broadcasting. Yeah, that's a great triad there.
Did you know now why I'm a big fan of the revolution that you are preparing or working on?
Oh, geez. You're going to bring that up, huh? Well, for the folks who are listening, Tohami has been a huge help and a big supporter of Simple Rev. It's an upcoming Simplicity event on October 3rd and 4th, 2014 that Dan Hayes and I are organizing on behalf of the Simple Living community. We want to plant that flag in the ground for folks. So thank you, Tohami. I appreciate you mentioning that. I'm glad you're excited about it. There's a lot of other people who are stoked. Yeah. Man, I am jazzed.
We need networking in the Simple Living blogosphere, on the Simple Living sphere in general. We need to feel that we are not alone and there are other people who are on the same path with us. We need to connect with them, meet them face to face, and get inspired by their stories, and also connect with the experts, the gurus, the great simplifiers in our world.
Yeah, that reminds me of something that you told me last year when you talked about people. They generally don't like to take action, but they will make changes if they have the support and accountability of a community. And that's really what I'm trying to pull off with Simple Rev, is a feeling of community and even a feeling of family. That not just that we're all in this together, but we're here to support each other and encourage each other and make any one of us individually much better and bigger and simpler than we could be alone. Is there anything else that we did not talk about that you would like people to know?
Yeah, maybe one thing we can end up with as an action point for our listeners. I encourage everyone who's listening to us now to get a sheet of paper and write down from their memory what were the moments in their lives that brought them the most joy. So since their childhood till now, what were the big moments in their lives that brought them the most joy? And try to connect the dots and see the theme, the common theme between these memories and these incidents. And for sure, they will find a link to their passion hidden in these moments of you know, optimal experience and happiness. And this is the lead to find their passion. And of course, they can get the past technique and find their passion in less than 30 minutes. But this is a very good exercise, because so many of us are living our lives and we had a feeling or a belief that life is not good, life is not fair. But when they go back and search in their memories, there are a lot of moments that they should be grateful for, and things that brought them happiness, intense levels of happiness, but they forgot about them. So review these things again and be grateful for that, and also notice the common theme or the thread between these events, and passion will become very clear.
Very cool. All right, so folks, get out that piece of paper, get out that pen or pencil, and start jotting. Tohami is going to tell us where we can find more about the PAS technique and where we can find them online. So you're going to want to jot that down. So Tohami, where can we find out more about the PAS technique and the other groovy places that you hang out online?
Yeah, it's on midwaysimplicity.com. You will find the link to the ebook on the right sidebar. And if you would like to have the direct URL, it's midwaysimplicity.com/PAS-technique. So it's midwaysimplicity.com/PAS-technique.
Okay. Anywhere else, your YouTube channel or Twitter or anywhere else that folks want to connect with you after hearing this?
Yeah, they can get all the links, all the channels from midwaysimplicity.com. directly.
Yeah. All right. Hey, that's pretty simple. Just a singular place for folks to go wherever they want to get what they want to get. That's great. Well, hey, I just want to thank you again for coming on the show, my friend. It's been enlightening and it's been invigorating. All this talk about passion. Oh my goodness. My mind is just going to be spinning for the rest of the day. Look what you've done to me.
Thank you so much. And passion is king.
It sure is. Well, thanks again for being on the show, Tohami.
Thank you so much, Joel. It has been an honor.
Hi again, my friend. I know I've asked you this before. I'm going to ask you again. Man, are you fired up? Because I am fired up. I am so glad that Tohami delivered on my promise to you at the top of the show that he and I would dive into what transforms an ordinary person into an extraordinary person, how to release your paycheck's death grip on how you live your life, and that awesome sweet spot, the intersection of passion and simplicity. So I guess that means love and marriage aren't the only things that go together like a horse and carriage, eh? Okay, stop yourself, Joel. Nobody wants to hear your rendition of a Frank Sinatra song. Pulling myself back. Good, done. Give the people what they want, Joel, which would be a reminder to check out MidwaySimplicity.com for links and details to what Tohami has done and has brewing. Box checked. Here's another box that I would like you to check. Tohami and I shared a ton of resources and great websites during our chat, and you should go browse them in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM044. The show notes are also where you'll find a link to Tohami's PAS technique, which if you want to support this show, you can get through my affiliate link at valueofsimple.com/PAS. I am a big believer in his technique, and if I didn't already know my passion, which would be combining the spoken word with simplifying, organizing, and being money-wise, I would go back through the PAS technique in a heartbeat. I'll make a small commission if you purchase through my special link of valuesimple.com/PAS, but as always, there is no obligation or expectation here. And also, as always, I encourage you to tell me what you need from this show or just of me in general. You can email me at joel@valueofsimple.com. Leave a voicemail on any Value of Simple page with the inconspicuous widget. And if you want, say something in 140 characters or less via my Twitter handle at Joel Zaslavsky. I hang out in other places online. One of them would be simplerev.com. That's simplerev.com, where you can join the email list and be the first to have a shot at early bird Simple Rev tickets when they go on sale March 31st. In our next episode, I will have two float tank enthusiasts who are trying to change the world one mindful, stress-releasing float at a time. But until then, thanks a ton for joining me on our shared journey to simplify, organize, and be money-wise. It would not be nearly as fun or as meaningful without you. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.